Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
It's the Crossover Sports Illustrated's NBA Show. Breaking down the latest news, rumors, and everything in between. Here's your hosts, Chris Mannix, Rohan Akhmi, and Chris Herring.
And we are back. Crossover NBA podcast, joined this week from New York City by Chris Herring, senior writer with Sports Illustrated. Also from SI, from parts unknown, as he often is, Rohan Nadkarni. Rohan, where are you this week? Are you on South Beach at the moment?
I wish I was on South Beach. It's equally as exciting to be on a Zoom with you, though, Mannix, I gotta say.
I understand that feeling. All right, so we're gonna get into the Warriors and the Kings. I also want to talk a little bit about the Knicks, how they played against the Cavaliers, facing kind of a must-win game for Cleveland. Of course, my Lakers rolling right now.
Oh,
rolling. The bandwagon is filling up. Get ready, Laker Nation. All right, but first, I do want to talk about what happened last night between Draymond Green and Domantas Sabonis. Stompgate, if you will. Late in the fourth quarter, close game. Draymond and Sabonis get tangled up after a defensive rebound by the Warriors. Sabonis appears to grab the leg of Draymond Green. Draymond stomps on Sabonis as he wriggles his leg free. This led to some incredible unintentional comedy after the game, guys, with, you know, ESPN reporting that Sabonis was going to get an x-ray. Well, he needed an x-ray because might have had a broken rib in there somewhere. Contusion of some kind. Not surprisingly, those x-rays were negative. But then Mark Spears from Antscape reports that Draymond Green was going to get an x-ray on his ankle because, you know, clearly that was something that could have caused a significant injury. Before I get your take on what happened between Draymond and Sabonis, here's Shaquille O'Neal on Inside the NBA reacting to what happened there.
Sit up here and be a hypocrite. I did the same thing. I really would. Don't be grabbing me, because what am I going to do? Like, if I stay there and just try to run forward, I'll fall. You got to get him up off you. And if you're up off you and you're in the way, you might get stomped on. Was it a dirty play? Of course it was a dirty play.
But then just say that and leave it alone.
Well, don't. Well, hey, if you, just you don't it. Grab me, this won't happen.
You can't go, hey, man, you can't go around.
That's true. If he never grabbed him, that wouldn't happen. I would agree with that.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
I do
you.
Agree with
one
that.
Bad play,
on
one
somebody.
Bad play
but
begets
do,
another bad play. That's like, it. Well, don't grab me.
But if I grab you and you hit me with a chair, it's not. It's like a. It's just excessive. I'm just saying the stomp was.
Yeah,
I'm not saying
simple.
That he shouldn't like get him
okay,
off
well,
him.
Okay, well,
but it was a little excessive.
Hold on. Would you like to get on the floor and show me the options when somebody grabs you?
No, I'm just not gonna just move away.
Move away how?
Just walk.
All right, lay on the floor and grab Michael.
I am squarely on the side of Shaquille O'Neal, because I just didn't think the referees needed to throw Draymond Green out. If you want to give him a flagrant one, do it. If you want to tack on a technical foul, do it. If you want to add a personal foul to it, as many fouls as you wanted to give Draymond Green, I was cool with. I was not cool with the flagrant foul two, which led to the ejection of Draymond, particularly when it's very clear that Sabonis initiated all this. If Sabonis doesn't grab the leg of Draymond, Draymond doesn't step on his chest. And yes, the step, the stomp, whatever you want to call it, was unnecessary. But in that situation, I would just love to see referees use some discretion. You've got a close game. Draymond is a pivotal player for Golden State. A series like this, a game like this, could shift everything as far as the outcome of this series. And the referees in charge decided to boot Draymond from that game. So, Rohan, I'll start with you because I know you're on the other side of this based on what I read on Twitter last night. You're obviously, you know, looking out for the health of Domas Sabonis, because, you know, we gotta look out for the health there, because that was pure violence, man. Like, I cover boxing. I've never seen anything like that. I've never seen. Like, I'm sure, Rohan, you're going to tell me that Sabonis didn't sell that stomp, that he didn't overreact to that stomp, and that's part of why we're here right now.
Well, I used a boxing reference in the column that I wrote last night, Chris, in your honor, because Sabonis looked like he'd been punched in the gut by prime Mike Tyson. I just think that everything you said about what the referee should have done applies to Draymond Green. Using discretion, not getting yourself thrown out of a big game. Draymond Green himself has to recognize, what does Draymond do during every playoff game? And, you know, I wrote about this today. I thought the ejection was fair. I don't want him to be suspended. Draymond starts every playoff game engaging in mental warfare with the opponent, okay? He's yelling at the fans. He's yelling at the refs. He's yelling at the other players. He's clapping in people's faces. He's taking some hard fouls. He's playing aggressive. He comes right up to the line every single game. This is what opponents are going to do to Draymond Green in the playoffs. They're going to try to push the envelope. They're going to try to get him kicked out. They're going to try to get him technical fouls. And this is not new. I mean, I'm thinking back to the Grizzlies-Clippers series when Zach Randolph was getting in Blake Griffin's face, pushing him around, being physical. This is part of the challenge of the playoffs, is keeping your composure during these emotional moments. Do I think Sabonis oversold the contact? Yes, absolutely. But there's no question that Draymond Green not only stomped on him, used his body as a launching pad. Like, he jumped off Domantas Sabonis like he was a slam ball trampoline. It was ridiculous. What if Draymond?
Okay, no, we didn't. But, no, we didn't.
But what if? Okay, sure. But what if Draymond oversells the contact? You know what I'm saying? Like, what if Draymond hits the deck after Sabonis grabs his ankle? Then maybe Domantas is the one being thrown out. Listen, was it a cheap play by Sabonis? Yes, it was. But this is what teams are going to do to Draymond Green in the playoffs. They're going to push the envelope with him because of how important he is to the Warriors, and see if they can make his emotions get the best of him. That's the challenge that he has to face, and he has to be better than that. He's not a rook. He's been through how many championship runs now? He has to know better than to put himself in the position to leave it in the referee's hands.
Okay, Herring, I want you to break the tie here, but I do want to push back on Rohan here, because look, we've had the benefit of seeing that play, you know, 50 times, watching it in slow motion. My issue with Draymond getting tossed is that you have to understand the moment, right? Like, it's a heated moment where a guy grabs your ankle. And yeah, should Draymond have processed that and said, look, maybe I should just flop myself the way that, you know, Sabonis was prepared to, or I should have done something other than step on his chest? Yeah, but like, at the height of activity is when this play happened, in the heat of the moment in the fourth quarter. That's why I think some discretion should have been used by the referee. Give him a flagrant one, but keep him in a game like this.
Look, I wrote a column, I think, 3 weeks ago. I think it was March 30th, so it's a little bit less than 3 weeks ago, about how it's very, very clear that the league essentially does favors for guys of Draymond's stature. Him and Luka both were on the line of getting their 16th technical fouls. If you remember at the time, Dallas was kind of trying to still fight their way in before they were trying to fight their way out of the play-in scenario. Draymond had a play where it was very clear that everybody was mindful of how many technical fouls he had, and they were trying not to get him an additional suspension. He absolutely did enough to earn it. They didn't give it to him. Look, we've seen Draymond on both sides of this before. He has fundamentally probably cost the Warriors a championship before because of his antics in the league coming down on him. At what point do you, as Draymond Green, just say, like, I've got to be smarter than this? And the Warriors have talked about this for years, about the idea that he is a fuse, and when he's lit and when he's ignited, that you just kind of have to let the fire play out however it's going to play out. That if you take that part away from him, that he's not the player that he is, he's not the personality that he is. But at a certain point, to Rohan's point about all the, I guess I won't say grandstanding, but just like the energy that he's trying to give his team and kind of the antics and the villain that he's playing, he oversteps the line. And I thought the funniest thing I've seen since all this happened last night was someone posting, here's what a normal person does when their leg is grabbed in the middle of a play. And the normal person they cited is not really normal because it was Dylan Brooks, but it was Chris Middleton grabbing Dylan Brooks's foot, his ankle, and Dylan Brooks holding his arms up as to say, I'm innocent, I'm not doing anything here, and then stepping out of it and getting a foul call on Chris Middleton. What I would say, a couple things. One, I think the league should probably penalize people grabbing onto people's legs more than just giving a personal foul. I think if you threaten to give people technical fouls for it, it would be more forceful because it could actually hurt someone. Two, there's no universe in which anybody can realistically sit with a straight face and say that Draymond was simply trying to shake his leg free. He could have done that without stopping on Domantas Sabonis. It was just a stupid play given the history and given the fact that he's always daring the officials to not call a technical or not call a flagrant two. Yes, they could have given him a flagrant one. They could have given him a flagrant and a technical. But the way he was so demonstrative about it, and the fact that he actually could have hurt Sabonis, not that he did, not that it looked like he'd actually really, really hurt him, but the fact that he could have, I think, is why it's okay to actually take the step they did. He's been saved so many other times where they didn't take that step. And the fact that they did it here, the fact that they were already down 1-0 and losing in the game with 7 minutes to go when Draymond did it yesterday, is just stupid on his part. And it's exactly what Rohan said, and playing into the fact that you know that Draymond is wild enough to maybe go for it and to take a step like that, a literal step.
I'm almost to the point where if you grab a guy by the leg in that moment, you almost deserve to get stepped on. Like, I'm just there. Like, you know, he's trying to get up the floor. It's a transition opportunity. Like, don't grab his leg. Like, that was a straight dirty play by Sabonis. It was dirty. That wasn't just a foul.
It was. And it could have been penalized more. I agree with that part. And
Throw them both out in that circumstance.
I tweeted something along those lines. I didn't go that far, but I did tweet out something effective. I probably would have penalized Sabonis more than a foul. By the way, Sabonis, If he's too foolish,
I think
with it
was technically a flagrant one. Technical, not that it really matters.
Oh, okay.
I think it was a technical, I believe, on Sabonis in that.
But he finished the game with five personals, and so it's like at a certain point it does become meaningful. I know Alex Lynn has had his moment in the sun in this series, but if Sabonis fouls out, it's a huge deal.
He's the engine. Sabonis is more important to the Kings than Draymond is to the Warriors.
Absolutely.
Being honest.
Absolutely. But, I mean, to get to the point of how important he is to the Warriors, first of all, it goes without saying that he is. Two, I think Dan Feldman from NBC Sports tweeted, the Warriors' defensive rating was 153 for the last 7 minutes of that game once he was ejected. They lost that game by a few points. They were down by 4 points when it happened, and they had started – I mean, they held the Kings to the second-worst three-point shooting performance of the Kings' season. So, I mean, this was really, really meaningful. I absolutely think Sabonis was in the wrong. I think they could have penalized him even a little bit more than what they did. But if you're Draymond, like, at what point is the responsibility on you to be smarter? Especially after, again, the team has probably very almost certainly lost a championship because of the fact that Draymond has not been able to really kind of just rein it in a little bit in moments.
Right, like 2016. Yeah, they, you know, what he did with LeBron, undoubtedly it had an impact on that series. I just think for a referee, you have to go into these games with the mindset that unless it is so egregious that you have no other choice, keep guys on the floor, keep guys in games. Referees should not be variables in the outcome of games. And I understand it's a defensible position what the referees did. But I'll tell you this, TNT brought Monty McCutcheon in to speak about what happened. Monty McCutcheon, of course, the czar of NBA referees. I talk to Monty all the time. And Monty is very often full-throated in his support of referees' decisions and the job that they do. When Monty McCutcheon came out there, one of the first things he said was that was a difficult call to make. Like, it wasn't like, gotta do it, have to do it, obvious. Monty McCutcheon was tempered in his response to what the referees did with Draymond Green. Again, defensible, no question about it. But my just position on referees is don't be responsible for throwing a guy out when you got another choice. And I think they had another choice there, and they opted not to go that route. Let's talk about the series now. 2-0 Sacramento, which nobody saw coming. Steph Curry is now down 2-0 in a series for the first time in his career, which is an incredible statistic. Rohan, how much trouble is Golden State in right now? Because Sacramento is clearly not just happy to be here. Like, they are humming offensively, you know, the three-point shots last night notwithstanding, and they're playing defense. Like, they are defending like they've done at about, you know, 1% of the regular season. You've got De'Aaron Fox and Kevin Huerter chasing around Steph Curry, Davion Mitchell playing great defense. Like, how much trouble is Golden State in right now?
I think Golden State's in a massive amount of trouble. I think Mike Brown, who is going to run away with Coach of the Year, has just done an absolute masterclass in this series with his rotation, dusting off Alex Len, who played less than 200 minutes in the regular season, finding ways for him to be useful. I think the way he's rotated his guards, using Davion Mitchell to hound Steph Curry, finding the right combinations. Beyond that, shout out to Sam Esfandiari, who tweeted out this stat. The Warriors had the best lineup of all teams in the regular season with Curry, Clay, Wiggins, Draymond, and Kevon Looney. That lineup's been neutral. It hasn't been a positive for the Warriors so far in this series. That lineup was like plus 21 net rating during the regular season. I think Mike Brown has an intimate knowledge of how the Warriors' offense works. I think he's done a great job of making sure, you know, I'm sure they're drilling into their guards' heads every single day. You are staying with Steph, and we still see Steph get some of his relocation shots, but I think they've done as good a job of any team defensively, particularly against Steph Curry, making sure they stay attached. I think they've done a great job of just ignoring Draymond and Kevon Looney on offense to a degree that even other teams are not willing to do. The Warriors are in a lot of trouble, and the Kings are also playing. It's crazy. The Warriors are the number one pace team in the regular season. The Kings are daring them to play even faster than that. There was a possession last night, a little over 2 minutes left. You know, it's becoming a close game. The Kings get an offensive rebound, and they're still pushing the ball. It is so rare to see that in a playoff game for a team to like kind of force itself into a transition opportunity late in a close game. I've just been thoroughly impressed with the Kings. You're right, Chris. I did not see a 2-0 lead coming. I thought the Warriors would win this series decisively with just their playoff experience, the fact that they have the best player on the floor, and Steph Curry. I thoroughly impressed by the Kings. I think it's been a masterful job by Mike Brown.
What do you think, Harry?
I think, one, it's been really impressive for Sacramento, what they've done. I don't know that there was a bigger proponent kind of the season they had and someone that was enjoying it more than I was. I think sometimes we kind of can miss the boat when we focus on experience as much as we do. Not us three, but I think just generally speaking, we talk about the playoffs and everything. This is a team that is a matchup nightmare for Golden State. Let's just be honest. Defensively, and I wrote this in my column this morning, I think Steve Kerr is doing himself and the team a disservice not matching Wiggins' minutes with De'Aaron Fox. I'm starting to think that the same thing is somewhat true of Gary Payton the second, and Malik Monk. These are two guys that really are guys that can get their own shot, and pretty much no matter who that other person is that's guarding them, if it's not Wiggins or it's not Payton, can get their own shot whenever they want to, through step backs, through screens and rescreens, through just straight isolation. It really hasn't mattered. Those guys are going to get their shots. I think the scariest part of all this is we talk about the things that haven't worked for Golden State. Game one, Sabonis and Herter were awful. And game two, the Kings couldn't shoot. They were 9 for 37?
38,
38. We're talking about a team that was shooting less than 24% from three, and they won. And now, granted, that is with Draymond out, you know, towards the end of the game, but the Kings were winning when that happened. The Kings also, you know, as bad as Golden State's turnovers were to start the game, the Kings had more than just as many as they did to start the game. So, like, neither team was playing that well. Rohan, to your point before about the fact that the Kings pushed the ball in transition even late, there were moments at times yesterday where I was like, they need to slow the ball down just a little because they're turning it over when they've got a chance to kind of run clock and just own the game a little bit. But that's how they've played all year. And I think my friend Tom Haberstroh several years ago wrote a story about the Memphis Grizzlies and how I think for like 5-6 years running, they had the best record in the clutch. And his theory on it was that, well, they play slow all the time with their grit and grind style, that they're kind of used to this. I think the Kings have done the opposite, where they play fast all the time. They don't slow down at the end of games, and it throws teams the hell off at the end of games. They're just really, really unusual. This is a matchup nightmare for the Warriors, and I think really there were a lot of things that kind of pointed to it, but we just expected the Warriors' experience to take over. They don't have point of attack foot speed to guard Fox. They don't really have point of attack foot speed to guard Malik Monk. Maybe they will when Kerr makes the adjustments that he needs to make with Wiggins and Payton. But I don't see – I mean, they're going to play at home. Maybe that's the one thing. But they could be looking – possibly, I don't think it will happen, but they could be looking at Draymond getting suspended. They could be looking at a situation where they realize, okay, athleticism really doesn't shift or get less so when we're playing at home, you know, in terms of their ability to guard. So it's going to be really, really, really fascinating because this team just does not match up against the Warriors well. And we've seen this sort of thing before with the Lakers several years ago and other teams that just are coming off of a title or coming off of a situation where we expect something of them. But teams get older over the course of a year. And this has been a Warriors team that has not made sense really all year, for one reason or another, whether it's Wiggins missing 2 months and them looking different because of that, whether it's the bench that they think is going to be good and actually is terrible because it's too many young players in the rotation, whether it's Steph being out, whether it's the road stuff. The Warriors have been inconsistent all year, and the Kings have been consistent with the least amount of injuries, with the most minutes of their starting five, with their road record being right behind Milwaukee for the best in the league. There's really not anything that suggests that the Kings are going to struggle here. And I, you know, a 2-0 lead might be enough to convince people of that, but a 3-0 lead would really do it.
Well, real quick, I would just like to say, and, you know, everything Herring said is true. And as much as we're piling on the Warriors here, they're looking at a wide open Andrew Wiggins corner three that maybe gives them the lead with 8 seconds to go in game one.
True.
Game two, even after Draymond gets hurt, 1-point game with under 2 minutes to go, 101-102. The Warriors have been right there. I'll just throw that out.
And they have been all season long bad on the road. And it's not a leap to assume that when they go home, they're going to play a lot better. Now, you're right. Sacramento has been a very good road team, almost as good a road team this year as they are at home, record-wise. But I believe Golden State is going to play light years better. That's why I'm less concerned about the Warriors being down 2-0 than I would be virtually any other team that's in this position, because I think they're going to play a lot better. I think the more game minutes Andrew Wiggins gets, the better he's going to be. Like, I was very concerned. I was very concerned about how sharp he would be. I know he had a week off or whatever it was to practice, but you can't emulate playoff basketball in practice. You certainly can't emulate it when you miss 20 some odd regular season games. So I think Wiggins is going to keep getting his win back, keep improving, and eventually get back to being close to the player that we saw from years ago. I think Golden State wins these next two games. I do. To Rohan's point, they were right there at the end of game one. Wiggins makes that shot. They could have won it. They were right there at the end of game two. I assume they're going to be a lot better. To me, this series is going to come down to game five in Sacramento because I think the Warriors are going to rally. I think they're going to knock the wind out of the Kings' sails the next couple of games. And then the Kings will go home, back in front of that crowd, back in that atmosphere. And can they win a game five? Can a team this young, this inexperienced, win a game five against Golden State? I'm a believer in the Warriors at home. Not so much on the road. You know, that wasn't like a small sample size. That was 41 games of awfulness they were on the road this year. But at home, they're really good. Their defense gets a lot better. I'm concerned that it doesn't seem like Steve Kerr trusts Jordan Poole anymore. Like, he's got six guys, basically, in his rotation that he seems to be willing to rely on. So that's a concern if one of these guys gets into foul trouble. But if the Warriors are at full strength, if Draymond doesn't get suspended, if there's no foul issues the next couple of games, I think they win the next two. And I think we're looking at, like, the OK Corral is game five of this series between the Warriors and the Kings. All right.
This series has been incredible, by the way. It's been great. It's been awesome. Oh, my God.
Every single minute of the last two games they've played. And I expect that to continue. Like, I think Sacramento will lose the next two, but I don't think they're going to get blown out because their offense is too good. And Mike Brown's coaching genius has made, you know, lemonade out of lemons, basically, with what they're doing defensively. So it's been a remarkable run for Sacramento so far. All right, let's talk about the Lakers, who, I don't know if you guys know this, like, I picked to go to the NBA Finals. Like, I don't know if you're aware, but I picked the Los Angeles Lakers to make the NBA Finals. I got to tell you, when I turn around, like, the bandwagon's filling up, boys. The bandwagon is filling up behind me. People are getting on the Lakers train, predicting the deep playoff run for the Lakers. Now, they get the win in game one against Memphis. It sure doesn't sound like Ja Morant is going to play in game two. I'm very concerned about that hand because it's the right hand. It's the shooting hand. If Ja Morant had a left-hand injury, you can kind of get away with that, you know, if you're playing. But if you can't flex that wrist and you can't take jump shots, you're done. You're not going to be able to succeed at this level. But beyond that, like, hey, reminder, Austin Reeves is pretty good. Like, hey, Anthony Davis, a little more durable than people are giving him credit for this season. You know, I was watching when he went out at halftime with that stinger, and, like, the ABC halftime show was, like, killing him. They were piling on him. You know, I can't believe we're doing this to Anthony Davis again. Oh, my God. Like, how about we wait and see if he comes out of the locker room first? Like, how about we wait and see before we react to something we don't know the answer to? So, Lakers are in great position right now. Are you two, I'll put the question this way, are you two ready for me to comp you a couple of tickets on the Laker train? Because I got them for you right here, Herring. I got them. Lakers, this series looks like they're going to win if Ja can't play. Then you're talking about the winner of Golden State, Sacramento, whoever comes out of the other bracket. Is it time to get on board the Laker train?
I'm not there yet. What I will say is, obviously they should be favorites in the series. Some people felt that way. Obviously you, I imagine, felt that way
before the
series
began. LeBron James was the fourth best player on the floor in game one for the Lakers. Fourth best.
I know. Similar to what we're talking about with this game, the last game we just got done discussing, the game was tight up until we saw stuff really unravel as a result of the fact of, like, oh shit, Ja Morant got hurt. Seriously hurt. And with his... My fear when it happened, as I think most of us, was that he might have broken his wrist. So it's not that, but you would have almost thought that it was based on Ja's reaction and quote and everything like that from the locker room after the game. I think Memphis can be competitive with a lot of injuries. They can't with him and Steven Adams and Brandon Clark already being out. It was already a handful for them to try to just contain Anthony Davis before and Anthony Davis still looked impactful even after the stinger. And so I just don't, at that point, the only guys you've really got for Memphis that you're really concerned about, I would say, at times are going to be Bane and Jackson, and that's just not going to be enough to win this series if LA stays healthy. If something happens, Anthony Davis is always a risk, then maybe we revisit, but the Lakers look pretty good for now. based on that game, it's hard for me to really rubber stamp the idea of the Lakers being the biggest threat just because Davis is an ever-present injury risk, as we saw. They're rotation guys.
Well,
though
we didn't see we did, like, he came out for like the last 30 seconds of the second quarter, and then he
what I'm saying though is that
the second half.
Look, I also think you're right. There's a tendency to overreact anytime anything happens to him, even if he's just down for an extra beat or two. But
sprained his ankle in that Minnesota game. You know what was it in early April? Sprained his ankle. Looked like he was in trouble. Came back. Played through it. He's played through some stuff this year.
He has, and so maybe that's something that I need to, we all need to grow accustomed to. Maybe you have already.
I'm already there.
I struggle to see them as realistically as a favorite. Maybe matchup by matchup that changes, but who knows? I imagine the conversation around all this stuff will shift if Sacramento gets game three as well. But I will tell you how impressed I was by Rui Hachimura looking like an all-star in game one. Austin Reeves just completely taking over the fourth quarter in game one. That's stuff that, from a confidence standpoint, certainly in a matchup standpoint just against Memphis, that is going to make a relatively young team that is already hobbled look at and say, oh, damn, like we weren't expecting that. I was not familiar with your game sort of thing. We're not used to seeing LeBron be able to take that sort of back seat in a game. Davis, to some extent, too. Both of those guys had moments where they could just kind of sit and watch or play off of. They were doubling Rui Hachimura at one point. I mean, it was kind of bizarro world level stuff, but if that's the sort of production you're going to get out of them, even from time to time, that's the sort of stuff that reminds me of the title team that they had a few years ago, where you're watching Kentavious Caldwell-Pope play out of his mind, when you're watching Caruso make plays.
Kyle Kuzma.
That's the sort of stuff that, you know, as far down the path as you are, and I'm not really ready to go there as far as declaring them the favorite out of the West or the team I'd pick out of the West, there are some elements there that you can kind of see the makings of it if it were to come together, what it would look like. Again, Memphis is hobbled, so I'm not going to make too much of it going forward, but for this series, absolutely they're favored. They should be. We don't even know if Ja will be back at all. He made it sound like he won't be for game two. Woj just made it sound like he won't be for game two, but this looked like something that I think Ja might realize might just be like series season ending for him, which is unfortunate.
The worst part about watching that game was realizing that Mannix was going to get to take the biggest victory lap today. Like, as I was watching it, I was like, Mannix is going to be insufferable. I just want to read a couple of stats. Austin Reeves and Rui Hachimura combined to shoot 8 of 11 from 3, while Desmond Bane and Luke Kennard combined to shoot 4 of 14. And I don't want to – listen, Hachimura played the game of his life. I don't want to sound like Desmond Bane, who said he had the best game of his career. Let's see if he can do it again.
I'll let you continue on that. But just like – I'm a little put off by – the ongoing arrogance of Memphis. Like, what has Memphis done? Like, I get it. Desmond Bane, like, you're not going to do that again, but what have you done, Desmond Bane? Like, in the postseason? Like, I mean, come on. Like, and I like Desmond Bane, but yeah, you know, there's like this, you know, Dylan Brooks saying we want the Lakers. Okay, well, careful what you wish for. Desmond Bane saying Rui Hachimura can't, you know, daring him to do that again. One thing I heard, Rohan, from Lakers people when they acquired Hachimura a couple of months ago, catch and shoot threes. This is what he does. Like, this is where the numbers bump a little bit. He's been kind of mediocre from three-point range for the last season and a half, but catch and shoot threes, he's high 30s, low 40s. And all those shots he made in game one against Memphis, they were catch and shoot threes. So I'm a believer. If you give Rui Hachimura those kind of looks, he's going to make a lot of them.
Yes, and listen, this is part of the playoffs, right? Is you identify a guy and you say, we have to give up something. They did a great job on the LeBron AD pick and roll. Such a good job that when the Lakers went away from it late in the game and went to the Reeves AD pick and roll, Memphis didn't know what to do. They were having success switching Brooks and JJJ. when they started putting Reeves as the ball handler and LeBron as the decoy, I think Memphis wasn't prepared for that adjustment, certainly not the last few minutes of the fourth quarter. I also think we're talking so much about the jaw injury. Obviously, that's going to play a massive role moving forward. Yes, I do agree that the Lakers are kind of coming up on a favorable bracket here with Memphis hobbled. Golden State and Sacramento have their own issues outside of their series. I don't think we've discussed enough Memphis's front court and not having not even just one of Steven Adams or Brandon Clark, because you look at Memphis's bench, Tyus Jones is great. Luke Kennard gave them pretty good minutes and held up well defensively. Santi Aldama played 24 minutes. To his credit, he hit a couple threes. He is not scaring any team on either end of the floor. You know, he has to guard Anthony Davis at times when he's in the game. If they just had even one of Brandon Clark or Steven Adams, that makes a huge difference for their rotation. They were out-rebounded on the offensive glass. They were out-rebounded by 11 total. That is making a huge, you know, a subtle but huge difference in this series. Memphis being banged up in the front court. I think that's something maybe myself included did not take into account enough going into the series, just how much Memphis is missing. They just needed one of those guys, and they can cut down on some of these Aldama minutes. Because I talked about this headed in the postseason. I was already a little worried about Memphis's shooting. But, I mean, their bench, they got no options. I mean, you know, David Roddy played. It's not looking good for Memphis's rotation early. And that was only game one.
Their half-court offense is dreadful and has been mediocre all season long. And if they can't run the way they have with Ja Morant, they're going to be in some trouble. Like, if they can't get a bunch of transition opportunities, if they can't turn the Lakers over, they're going to be in some trouble. Simple as that. You're right about Steven Adams and Brandon Clark, especially Adams, I think, because Adams, you know, the Lakers don't really have an option for Adams. They don't have an answer in their bench. Like, you're not going to dust off Tristan Thompson to, you know, bang with Steven Adams for, you know, 15 minutes a game. So it definitely hurts, but this is where they are right now. And they were the number two seed without Steven Adams for most of what, you know, he's been out for a while, for months now. Brandon Clark, obviously more recent injury, but I just like the Lakers' chances, not just in this series, but, you know, in every series in the Western Conference moving forward. All right, finally, we've got Cavs against the Knicks tonight. Knicks took game one. Looked great. Jalen Brunson looked like the guy that guided Dallas to the Western Conference Finals last year. Julius Randle came up with some clutch plays. I kept my eye on him throughout the game because I think he is the wild card in all this. He plays even solid. I think the Knicks are going to have a great chance to win every game of this series. I was disappointed in the Cavs. This kind of played into what I wrote going into the postseason, where can they overcome the experience disadvantage, because they've got like 200 some odd games of playoff experience on the roster, but 165 of them belong to Danny Green and he didn't play in game one. So you've really just got Donovan Mitchell as far as playoff tested rotation players. And Mitchell was great, 38 points. He was Donovan Mitchell, but you know, Darius Garland, kind of a quiet 17. Caris LeVert off the bench at three. That's unacceptable. He's got to play a lot better for them. Herring, this feels like must win for Cleveland in game two. They can't go down 0-2 to the Knicks and expect to win four of the next five with three of them at MSG.
Yeah, it was not a great performance from them in game one, to say the least. I think the score ended up being tighter than moments of that game felt like. Also, some of the Knicks key guys, between Randle coming back from an injury and Josh Hart getting banged up in that game and still hitting, you know, what at one point kind of felt like almost a dagger three. The Knicks are still not even, I would not say completely at full strength, just as far as, you know, whether they'll even have Josh Hart tonight, for instance. Also, what I didn't love is that when you talk about experience, the Cavs were kind of chirping a little bit about the Knicks being too physical, it seemed like, or more physical than they expected. And it's like, that's literally a symptom of, oh, you guys haven't been here before. And I didn't, for some reason, maybe it was just Mitchell and the fact that he's kind of their flag bearer, that I felt like they would have just enough experience between him and their play-in last year. Jared Allen having been, you know, through some of this before with Brooklyn, that they would have enough experience to kind of carry them to where this sort of stuff isn't a concern. And when I heard that, that worried me a little bit. I mean, they still played good enough defense to give themselves a chance, but part of what we were concerned about going into this series with them, and from when I wrote about them in the preseason and went out to Cleveland in training camp, was how do they handle that fifth spot? Who steps up there? You would love, and it seems like for months they've wanted that guy to be Isaac Okoro, because he is the most prototypical defender, wing type, 3 and D guy. You don't really need someone that needs a lot of shots in that spot, because you've got two all-star level ball handlers and you've got two all-star level bigs. And it's very clear, it was always very clear, that teams are going to dare him to make shots. Dare him to take and dare him to make shots. He didn't do enough of that in game one. He's going to be left open. And it was very clear J.B. Bickerstaff was just kind of cycling through guys. Cycled through 3 or 4 guys just trying to find somebody there. He had a very quick hook with everybody, basically, after one stint if they weren't producing. And so that's a big question. I think the other question, too, and I know I'm guilty. I don't think you were on that pod with us, Chris. But with Rohan, I was saying, look, I think the Cavs bench is being a little bit overly criticized here. Like, yeah, they are not New York's bench. Certainly New York has more depth than they do. But I think that they'll make a stand. They folded hard in game one. There just wasn't much there. And if that's going to be the case, between what you're saying about the fact that if they lose game two tonight and then have to go to the Garden for the next two and their bench doesn't perform any better than it has, the series is over.
They're not going to wake up at the Garden down 2-0. Like, that's when the lights get really bright for them. And I have been focused on Caris LeVert. 1 for 7 from the field.
Bad.
Didn't make a 3-pointer. Yeah. Like, he's got to be there off the bench score. It can't be Chetty Osman. It can't be any of those guys that J.B. Bickerstaff, to your point, was cycling through. It's got to be Caris LeVert. Like, he's got to be the guy that steps up and gets them 10 to 15 points.
Yeah, guys, so we'll see. It's just not – it was not a good look. Like, you could look at the score and convince yourself that this is close, and it was. They've got the game at home, so maybe something else will happen tonight. But it's just hard to believe that between the bench stuff, the fifth score, the fifth player stuff, the experience aspect when they're about to head to MSG after tonight, I think it's more – I think this is actually more of a must-win game two than – Golden State has for a game three. That sounds a little silly, because I know no one's ever come back from 3-0 in the NBA, but that's how bad I think this is if Cleveland loses game two tonight at home. I just don't think they're going to get it done.
Cleveland's bench, they played like a game six of the conference finals rotation in game one. And look at the minutes on their bench. Dean Wade, 7 minutes. Chetty Osman, 19. Ricky Rubio, 6. Caris LeVert, 18. I mean, LeVert and Osman pretty much play the same position. They have no backup bigs. Rubio, they said,
you know who they could use, Rohan? You know who they could use? Kevin Love.
Kevin Love!
Like, they could use Kevin Love! That still doesn't make any sense to me. Why they just cut him loose and let him go down side with Miami?
They don't have
18 points or in the play-in game? And, look, he took a charge against Giannis that knocked him out of the game? Like, it's crazy.
Even if Kevin Love was giving them 12 minutes, that's literally 12 minutes they do not have from a backup big right now. I mean, Dean Wade is listed as a power forward, but he often comes in as that fifth guy next to Mobley and Allen. Clearly, they don't trust him. They only played 7 minutes. They don't have a backup center. Donovan Mitchell played 44. Darius Garland, Jared Allen, 43. Evan Mobley, 38. They're in dire straits here. I think it's clear Bickerstaff does not trust anyone on the bench. I was surprised they did not go to LeVert, even though he struggled. I mean, he struggled a lot with that bench unit that came in the second quarter, and it was just awful. I'm surprised they have not gone to LeVert a little bit more next to their core four, if only to give them a little bit of space. You look at the box score, and it says the Cavs took 31 threes, and that's not that many. Donovan Mitchell took 16 of them. Donovan Mitchell was pulling up from three. They are not generating threes on offense. It's hard enough when you have Mobley and Allen on the floor and the Knicks can kind of crowd the paint. I thought Mitchell Robinson did a fantastic job in the paint in game one, but they're kicking out to Okoro. He shot a few times. A bunch of times he looked scared to shoot and drove to nowhere. Darius Garland, I just thought Darius Garland, only 13 shots in 43 minutes, 4 three-point attempts. He needs to be more aggressive when he's catching. He needs to be quick and attack closeouts or take some threes because they're desperate for some space. I don't know if they got to try Danny Green, if they got to try Lamar Stevens, but they need to figure out something quick with the bench, something to get their offense some space. And I feel bad because Okoro, I think he, the second half of the season, he ticked up a little bit. And it was exciting to see him kind of take that step forward. That has to be a very demoralizing game one for him.
Danny Green, look, he only played, what, 8 games for Cleveland, 12 minutes a game. But he's the most experienced playoff guy out there. So maybe rolling him out there, see if he can get hot, see if he can defend at this stage coming off his significant injury. Not the worst idea in the world for Cleveland. Maybe one J.B. Bickerstaff ultimately goes to. Last thing I want to bring up. Herring, you wrote about this after Giannis went down with that back injury, an injury that was caused in part by Giannis trying to avoid Kevin Love, who was trying to take a charge. We have seen many times over the years players get hurt because they're in the air when an opponent is trying to take a charge. Is there a solution to this in your mind? Because you wrote a column about how the NBA needs to address this. I saw Doc Rivers come out and say, we can't get rid of the charge because, you know, look, that just wouldn't make any sense. And I tend to agree with that because if you get rid of the charge, Giannis might average 60, you know, in a season because nobody can hang with him physically when he goes to the basket. So what is the solution, or is there one, for this issue with players getting hurt while trying to avoid charges?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things, and I think the distinction you just made is really, really important because, we live in an era where social media and everything else, people are going to assume when they read a headline that they understand the total premise of your story without having read it, and by no means was I arguing get rid of the charge. I was saying that they need to change the rules around it. You can't just take it out completely because, like you said, Giannis, I don't know how you'd stop Giannis, who, by the way, basically has twice as many charges over the last 5 years since he won his first MVP than anybody else. Julius Randle, we saw how physical he is against a team like the Cavs, and he's in second by like 75 charges or something crazy behind Giannis, who has like 150 of them. So first of all, you're not getting rid of it completely. I think there's a couple things you can do. You can move the restricted area out further, which is something that I want to say in response to my tweet and my story on it. Mark Cuban was saying that they should do that. There is the idea of when guys have to be set and whether or not you put in place a rule that says that you have to be set before someone picks the ball up to really gather, so that they can't slide in as someone is already in the air or jumping at that point, which I do think that would actually be probably a bit of a game changer just from the standpoint of guys being undercut. I don't think it was mere coincidence that, you know, this particular weekend, one game and then the next one, you had two guys get hurt on similar types of plays. Basically, guys that are – there's an incentive to defend that way as opposed to trying to jump with them. Let's be honest here. It's very, very difficult to jump with Giannis Antetokounmpo. It's very difficult to jump with Ja Morant. You're probably not going to be able to really meet them at the peak or at the summit, so to speak, but you can slide in front of them. But I don't know if that's the incentive we want. You want to be able to stop these guys. But frankly, you also can get really hurt trying to stop them that way too. We've also seen Grant Williams. We've also seen Torrey Craig, who lost a tooth trying to guard Giannis earlier this year. So it's not an easy job. It's not an easy fix, but I do think that there is one that looks better than this. It does not result in just taking the charge out of the game completely because I don't think that's reasonable at all. But I do think that there's a better way than this.
Yeah, I think your point about changing when a guy is eligible to draw a charge, basically, because right now if a guy's in the air, you can't slide underneath him. Like, that is always going to be called a block. But expanding it to say when a guy is gathering, you know, when he's picked up the ball and he's going into his move at the rim, you can't just slide in front because that's when it's the most dangerous. When a guy's committed to taking a shot and elevating and all of a sudden he sees, you know, Kevin Love, Kyle Lowry, any of the, you know, peak charge takers that are out there step in front of him. Because I don't think those are basketball plays, if we're being real here. Like, frankly, I don't think any big man should be taking too many charges. Like, you should be competing for block shots and things of that nature. But I do think that you'll kind of clean it up if you have a situation where you can say Giannis has picked up the ball, he's making his move, so you can't step in front of him. And I think once guys realize that they're not going to get those calls, you're going to see more defense played in those situations. Yeah, 7 or 8 times out of 10, it's probably going to favor Giannis because you can't elevate with him unless you're like Anthony Davis or Zion Williamson or somebody else, you know, Rudy Gobert, some other peak shot blocker. But I would like to see them change that because this is happening too often. Like, Giannis got hurt because he was kind of in his move, saw Kevin Love step in front, and he kind of twisted a little bit to get around him.
He contorted,
So I do think, Rohan, we need to see something change going into next year because, look, that's like the NBA doesn't want to see Giannis on his back, you know, writhing in pain. It doesn't want to see Ja Morant, you know, down and out potentially for the rest of the series. Like, you want to protect your stars, and your stars are often the guys most often making risky moves going up like that because they are stars and they are capable of those kind of things.
Listen, I say this as someone who grew up watching Udonis Haslem sacrifice his body for charges over and over again. It's just not fun to watch. Like, I don't watch basketball to see guys crashing into each other. The one thing I'll say, it's not even pushback, but I am sympathetic to the people who are like, this game has already been tilted so much in the offense's favor. Can we continue to do that? You know, what? And I'll say, like, what have we always said about Ja Morant? Like, this is a dangerous style of basketball that he plays. Like, we kind of knew the risks of someone like Ja Morant. Like, Giannis, we love his physicality. We love that he's knocking people's teeth out, etc. So there's aspects of it that we like, and, you know, maybe I'm into the idea of moving the restricted area out, but I'm with you. It's not fun to watch. At the same time, I'd need to see it be tested or something first, just because I am sympathetic to the idea that there's a lot of ways that the game's been made easier for offensive players. And again, like, I don't, you know, and then not only that, it incentivizes flopping, and then you have Marcus Smart flopping his way to a Defensive Player of the Year award. So
careful. Marcus Smart hears everything out there.
That's true. Okay. All right.
Trey Young's in a lot of trouble. Let me just predict right now. We're recording this Tuesday afternoon. Marcus Smart clearly saw the Defensive Player of the Year vote. Didn't get a single vote for Defensive Player of the Year after winning it last year. If you think Marcus Smart isn't aware of that and isn't going to take it out on Trey Young, good luck. I'm going to predict Trey Young takes more shots than scores points tonight. That's my my prediction there. But I agree with you. Maybe the solution is in part, like, you know, I'm just spitballing here, but like, you allow for a little more contact between guys if they're going up to block
more
shots.
No,
right now, it's the rule of verticality.
Yeah,
so maybe you can say, look, if you go up and there's contact, as long as a guy is, you know, is not leaning over, you know, you're going to get the benefit of the doubt from the referees. Are going to let you play through some stuff. Maybe that's a potential solution. All right, we will be back later in the week. We'll see where the Warriors and Kings stand at that point. Maybe both Herring and Rohan will be ready to purchase tickets on the Laker bandwagon. I will have them ready for you guys later in the week.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours.
Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.